Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on alternative lifestyles, alternative data. Collection agencies are becoming more sophisticated in scoring accounts, and more of them are looking to non-traditional data sources, as well as doing a more extensive job of mining the data inside of their own offices to help them better predict when to contact someone or whether someone is a good candidate to pay an unpaid debt. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Microbuild. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I wanted to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, including the Daily Digest email newsletter and the Getting to Know profile, as well as hosts webinars like this one and delivers information across a multitude of communications channels. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news. Well, at least I think it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Mike Hiller is the Vice President of Collections for American Profit Recovery. He joined the company more than a decade ago as an entry-level employee. He is a licensed collection manager in Michigan and serves as a subject matter expert for the Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. Nick Jarman is the Chief Operating Officer of Credit Collection Partners and owner of Right Away Consulting and Coaching. He recently served a three-year term on the board of directors for ACA International and is a past president of the Missouri Collectors Association. He's also been recognized by ACA International with the International Fellowship of Certified Collection Executives. Kelly Parsons O'Brien is the president of Pacific Credit Services, formerly known as Credit Bureau Associates. She's a third-generation debt collector and has worked for the family business since 1994. She took a small break for an adventure in college and a couple of jobs, including working at Wells Fargo and Sierra Spring Water. Kelly came back to the company in 1998 to take on the adventure of being a collections manager. In January of 2015, Kelly, along with her business partner, purchased the company. She currently serves as the president for the California Association of Collectors. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them when the discussion is concluded. If you submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. Before we launch into the discussion, I just want to take a minute and read the following disclaimer just in case. This information is not intended to be legal advice and may not be used as legal advice. Every effort has been made to assure this information is up to date. It is not intended to be a full and exhaustive explanation of the law in any area, nor should it be used to replace the advice of any legal counsel. Any opinions expressed are the opinions of the speakers and not of their organization. And with that, let's begin today's discussion. And Mike, I'll ask you, give you the honor of asking you the first question. I thought it'd be best, let's start by establishing a baseline, because alternative data is probably a subjective term, and that how I define it is different than how you define it, which is different than how someone else might define it. So let's maybe start and go around the panel and ask, what data does your agency normally use when scoring accounts for collectability?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So what we use is an external scoring platform augmented with our own internal score. And the criterion that we use for our internal scoring are as follows. So the quick list is prior payments, right? So nothing predicts a payment better than a payment. There's also contacts, class of business, payment rate. So we look at payment rate and class of business recovery rate. We look at payment rates on the client level, as well as recovery rate on the client level. And then we look at balance, we look at age. So you have a couple different aggregates. You have class of business aggregate and then the client's aggregates, each of which we take into consideration. And then what we discovered, was our external scoring is a good predictor of contacts, whereas our internal scoring is a much better predictor of the likelihood that a consumer will actually pay.
Got it. Kelly, what about you? Let's start maybe with the same question. What does your agency normally use when scoring or looking at an account for collectability?
So thanks, Mike. So we are still, I think, kind of like in the motion of moving in a direction. When you asked me to be on the webinar, I thought a lot about all these ideas that I'd been collecting and haven't really implemented yet. So for our, I don't know, kind of the baseline of what we use is our outside scoring much more than our internal processes. So that's kind of where we're looking at, is looking more at our internal database and some other ideas that I've had that I'll share as we go along here on kind of changing the way we're doing things. We're a smaller operation, only about 15 collectors. And so a lot of times it's this gut feeling, and I know that that's how many agencies have run their offices for a long time. And I know as technology is changing, everybody's moving in that direction. So it's just a matter of kind of catching up with the curve sometimes in adding all of these pieces of the puzzle. So I definitely am on the call as a participant looking for new ideas, just as much as I'll be able to share some of the ideas that we haven't already implemented, but that I have kind of on my list to do.
Excellent. And Nick, why don't you take a stab at it and talk a little bit about what you're doing at your agency?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the interesting thing, I'm sure you might be familiar with IntelliTech, but they've got an interesting way of kind of looking at how they do their scoring and propensity to pay and things like that. So really over the last 6 months, we've really worked pretty closely with them to develop certain types of, you know, different data than we would traditionally look at. You know, so I think for us, the first thing that we look at is more of a contactability score. So the first thing we want to do is to try to identify the segment of our accounts that we have the highest likelihood to contact. And then from that standpoint, we would then break it down from there to look at collectability. And so from the collectability standpoint, we're looking at various factors from external scoring models to internal factors, such as your last payment dates, age of the accounts, balance ranges, and things of that nature. But I think it's a pretty loaded question. I don't think that there's really one score that you can put into place anymore. I think it's looking at a multitude of different things and working the accounts through that strategy.
Let me follow up with you. But you say that there's not one score. Do you mean like, you know, there's so many different variables, like depending on the debt, the type of debt, the age, things like that, the geography, that it's really kind of hard to sort of look at the same set of criteria from one agency to the next in terms of how they're going to assess collectability or contactability?
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. I think it's important to kind of look at the history of scoring and what we're dealing with. Whereas 15, 20 years ago, a lot of people were just kind of getting introduced to that recovery score. And when we were getting introduced to that single recovery score, it would play the biggest factor in how we would put together our collection strategy. Fast forward maybe 10 years ago, we started to get introduced to these demographic-based models. So companies would go out there and look at the different regions in the country, different areas, states, locales, and based on the level of income, the poverty levels, taxes, things of that nature, they would allow us to look at it from a demographic model. So you started to combine the personal recovery score with more of a demographic-based model. And then over the last several years, probably 3 to 5 years, we started to see companies dabble in what I consider the contactability score, which is looking at which accounts or which phone numbers are more likely to lead to that specific consumer. So in that example right there, there's really, you know, three different scores that you could utilize and leverage to try to maximize your recoveries.
And I also say, like, for our office, we aren't strictly healthcare. You know, we collect on a huge wide variety. And so one of the things that we deal with is, you know, what works in my healthcare stuff does not work in my deficiency balances as well, or my utility debt or my property management accounts. So that was one thing that we had to make the adjustments on, is really looking at the type of debt that we were recovering and which score worked best in those arenas.
So does that mean then, Kelly, that you have sort of models within models inside your office, depending on the type of debt, different accounts are run through different models?
Right. Yeah. So like where like maybe a collectability score based on credit would work really well for like our deficiency balance and credit card debt, people that have established credit, that works a little bit better. But in the utility arena, it's not, it doesn't work as effectively because many people that leave utility debt outstanding often don't have a large credit history in my experience. So that doesn't, the collectability score from like a credit report isn't as strong as something, like I said, in the, like the credit card type debt.
Got it. Let me ask, and Mike, I'll start with you again. We'll go around and how often or have there been any additions or subtractions to the list of data, the criteria that you're using, or how often can you go into how often you're sort of reassessing that, the internal model at least?
Yeah, absolutely. So early off, we're looking at it all the time. I mean, every week we were reevaluating, because the last thing you want is it to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? This has a great score, so spend all this time and energy trying to collect it, and you're more successful. Why? Because you spend more time and energy trying to collect it. So doing double blind results tests, so you don't know going in what the scores are on a segment of your accounts. And we handle a wide variety of debt too, so that's important to us. And as it's evolved, we look at it at least twice a year, and we certainly have added different criterion. But really, if we back up and we go to your first question, what do you include? So I listed off 8 different things. So what you need to decide is what's important, what predicts your outcomes, right? So those criterion. And then depending on what works, like Kelly was saying, in different industries for different clients, you assign weights, right? So each of the criterion has weights assigned to it. And maybe prior payments has a larger weight than, say, the individual client recovery rate. And so you have your criterion, you have your base, but then you adjust the weights accordingly. And that's worked pretty well for us. We're a big fan of fixing things that aren't broken. So that, I like looking at this stuff. I like tweaking it. Currently, what we're looking at is nearbys. So something as mundane as speaking with a third party that knows the consumer, we have an increased likelihood of getting that paid regardless if we get the consumer on the phone. I think that's really interesting. So that's something we're currently looking at.
Well, Mike, maybe I could ask you a question. So when you talk about in the beginning, you were looking at it like every week, and then Nick, you mentioned IntelliTech being on it for 6 months. So if somebody was trying to, implement some of these things that we're talking about, do you make changes too soon, or like what's the sweet spot in looking to see if something's working? Because I notice I'll put something out new, and if it doesn't work right away, I'm like, okay, never mind. But I might not even given that an opportunity to actually work.
Yeah, and I think that's an important facet of what we're discussing today. So the way we did it is we looked at historical data. So it's not like we're changing the score and changing our behavior towards those consumers with our work efforts. What we're doing is we're taking the score, looking at, for instance, all of 2017. Let's score it historically, see how well that score performs against accounts that we've already collected or weren't able to collect.
Okay, that makes sense. And then for you, Nick, like with IntelliTech using them, not as a plug, but is like how does that process work? Like with 6 months, has that been enough time for you guys to see increased recovery or?
Yeah, so we're actually, we're still in the revamping phase with them as far as, making sure that the data is coming back and looking at the different trends that it's creating. So I think the approach is, for us at least, is more of a customization for how their or a company similar to theirs will allow us to get in there and work together as a partner to come up with the best overall score or sorting mechanism to get us the results that we're looking for. So as far as a timeline, you know, I would suggest that similar to what Mike stated, but you know, generally what I've found is you're reviewing it on a formally on a quarterly basis is what I like to do and we do. And, but also that doesn't mean that, you know, daily, weekly, monthly, that you're not looking at trend analysis and different types of reports. Just to kind of piggyback off of what Mike said in one of the notes I have here, I think one of the most effective ways to really gauge a score when you're comparing them to other companies, and if you're doing testing, is to complete what they consider a retrospective analysis. And that's, you know, going back and taking the historical data, like Mike mentioned, that you already have on file. So 6 months or 12 months worth of data, whatever you can get a sufficient amount of information on, and taking that and then applying the score that they would have to the point in time when it was being collected, and then look at how those results and how those trends and how those would stagger based on whether it was a tier or a score level. And then that will give you a lot of insight as to how that score would have performed if you didn't do any segmentation. And so now if you do the segmentation and you kind of follow through with that strategy, then it will allow you to really leverage that data and the scoring to get the differences and put your resources in the right places.
Makes sense. Thank you. Excellent.
Yeah, that's great. Excellent. I just want to pause the discussion just for a minute and talk a little bit about our sponsor, Microbuilt. For more than 35 years, Microbuilt has been helping businesses assess and manage risk. They were a pioneer in the now exploding alternative credit data space, and as such have refined its products and services to deliver true business value. Over the years, Microbuilt has invested heavily in acquiring best-in-class data. They've built sophisticated systems for keeping data fresh and accurate, and powerful predictive models for making decisions around lending, leasing, collections, and risk management. With Microbuilt, you can customize the products you need and how much you want to spend, and all the products are provided through a single, simple access portal. Whether you're working in originations or debt collection, screening a potential hire or tenant, planning for growth, or keeping up with regulatory requirements, Microbuilt can be your partner, providing the insight and information you need to protect your business, grow your bottom line, and keep your company running smoothly. For more information, you can contact Microbuilt at 1-800-884-4747 or visit www.microbuilt.com. That's spelled microbuilt.com. Thanks again to Microbuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. And with that, let's go back to the discussion. There are a couple of questions that have come in, some that are more relevant to what we've been talking about, so I want to tackle those now. Others that I think I'm going to hold off on, so if I don't ask your question right away, I will definitely try to get to it before the end of the webinar. One question that's come in, and it's relevant to the time of year: how does time of year factor into this, say during tax time versus holiday season? Does that affect the data that you're using when you're scoring your account, either for collectability or contactability? And I'll leave that open to anybody who wants to tackle that one.
Yeah, I'll jump in there. So it sounds like someone was on your last webinar with us.
It does.
It's a very relevant question. I'm glad it was asked. So what we see, and this is with us, is we see that scores, so external scores, so out of the box, you can, you know, go to any vendor, basically. They're going to perform better all year round, except during tax time, and then you can throw them out the window. We collect from a lot of low-scoring accounts during income tax time, because for a lot of consumers, what is income tax if not forced savings? So that's what we see with our external models. And then our internal models perform a little better year-round. Income tax time throws a little curve, but ultimately they're performing better on the whole.
When I was getting ready, for the webinar, I was reading an article that talked a lot about, like, kind of taking the statistics side and looking at like your year productivity and trying to kind of ignore your tax time results. And so the article basically said you kind of throw out the window, not only like right before Christmas and also your tax season time when you're looking at your data, so that you can get a more accurate picture of kind of what your whole year looks like. And that was kind of their suggestion on when you're looking at data or how your accounts perform. And I thought it was kind of an interesting approach to looking at that so that you're getting a better baseline.
Great advice.
Yeah, Mike, this is Nick. And one of the, just to kind of throw a little bit of closure on that was, I think that, you know, during tax season would be a time that you would want to focus in more on the contactability aspect if you have that type of score in line. If you don't, I mean, I would highly recommend it. There's numerous different options that are out there, but you're really focusing on the contactability aspect of whether or not you're going to get them on the phone, because, you know, as we know, there's not a score out there that can predict whether or not somebody is getting a tax return. And so if you shift your focus less on propensity to pay at that time of year versus are they contactable, and is the information that you're putting your resources and efforts on, it'll give you definitely a bigger return as you'll open up the pool of consumers that you're talking to.
I love it when we can coin new words and phrases, and I think Nick just made one with contactable. I think that's going to be awesome. let's move now from what you guys are currently doing to what you would like to be doing. I'm going to ask, and I know Kelly, this is something you're working on and you've been trying to spend some time thinking about. So I want to ask you first, what types of data do you think would be most helpful in helping score and collect on unpaid accounts?
Well, I kind of am going to talk a little bit about your Collector Live thing that you did, or the, I don't know what you call it, but class or a meeting. And what Mary had talked about
just
is
call it awesome.
Okay, yeah, that's your awesome event that you put on. And how what Mary Shores talked about and treating the consumer like a customer. And I kind of wondered if we spent some more time surveying the payers. So maybe like a quick one or two questions that pops up after they make their payment online, or even on our phone system. Would you like to take a quick 1 minute survey? Something like that. I think that what we could do is kind of figure out what would make the consumer's experience better, and therefore maybe make it easier for the next customer or consumer to pay us. One experience, we do drop the direct drop voicemails. And I had a consumer call me back at like 7 a.m. So I just picked up the phone and it was a small bill. We had received mail return and she just wanted to take care of it. And she said, well, your messages seemed like a scam. And as personally, I'm getting a lot of those IRS calls. They're going to come and arrest me. And so I can understand how she felt about that. So I just engaged her and I said, well, what could we do differently about how our message sounded to make it less sounding like a scam? And she made the comment like, you know, maybe if we said something like, you know, we had received mail return. So then it made me think like maybe I want to drop a message on all my mail return debt that says, hey, we've received mail return and we'd like to be in contact with you. But that small amount of time that I was able to talk to her as a customer and get her feedback, I think that it's something that maybe our industry is missing out on with the contactability and collectability. All of those things I think are important, but I think also just making the experience easier for the consumer to pay us might be part of this puzzle. I also think that marketing, so looking at, again, the consumers that we're dealing with in a marketing perspective, I was thinking about like how do bankruptcy attorneys market for customers. They probably look at credit scores in their area, people that have bad credit or less than perfect credit, and kind of looking at that as maybe we could handle a settlement campaign based on your lower score people or people that might be close to bankruptcy and kind of tap into those people. And so that's kind of the realm that I was looking at. I don't know much about it, but a lot of the marketing people that we are dealing with talk about geocaching and reaching people in certain areas. So I was thinking maybe if you were a student loan person, maybe talking, you know, pulling the data of the people that work at that school or, you know, are at that school during a period of time. And then maybe that would help you with the nearbys. Like I know that we're offered the person's cell phone plus anybody else that has the cell phone on that plan. So I was thinking that might be another way that you could probably kind of target your nearbys, to Mike's point.
Very interesting. Nick, Mike, do you have anything? Let me ask you, and Nick, I'll go with you first. What would you like to see? You know, what's kind of on the wish list, or what do you think would be an interesting piece of data that would help either on the contactability side or on the collectability side?
So, fortunately for us, we're kind of working on that in a project now, and I guess it would better be considered as more of a perpetual score. So something that is constantly taking in factors and updating the overall end score. And with that, I would be referencing, in addition to what we've already talked about, taking into consideration, you know, the payment history with your client or the payment history with you. You know, that we talked about the contactability, the age of the accounts, but also looking at the efforts that we're putting on the account. So if we've made X amount of attempts in the morning, afternoon, evening, or weekend, then that might lower the score a little bit because we've tried or exhausted from a telephone perspective trying to reach them. Whereas you might have, as an example, a higher score if you have something that has less attempts in a certain area or time of day that you have. So for us, it's really looking at that, you know, how we can best put together. And it gets pretty drawn out, but that a perpetual model so that you're not having to constantly tweak it, but it's actually tweaking it on its own based on predetermining factors that you put in.
Yeah, I'll jump in, Mike. So, you know, the external models, you're paying for them, right? So every time you score, you pay to score. What's nice about developing something internally, is exactly what Nick's talking about, is our internal model is organic. And that is to say that every night we rescore everything based on events during that day. Now, they might not have had anything that'll change the score. That's fine. But eventually those accounts are going to age, and eventually we'll get contacts and payments and all these other things that we take into consideration. So we do update that and refresh it every day. It's a growing, living thing. And I'm really glad Kelly's on this webinar, because what she said is very forward thinking. And I would like to see more people in the industry thinking along those terms. I myself come from the behavioral and evolutionary psychology camp. So I'm interested in behavior, and you know, the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So something right now I'm looking at is transiency, right? So this isn't a hiring webinar, but when you hire collection candidates and interview them and screen them, part of what you're looking at is, are they job hoppers, right? So think of that in terms of consumers. Well, a lot of consumers are transient. They move around a lot. So I'd be interested in a model that incorporated, you know, number of addresses in the past X amount of years. I'd rather spend my time on someone who's more stable, or a homeowner, quite frankly.
That's interesting. Is that data available? Is that something you're looking at, or is that something that's more sort of on, you know, on a wish list type of scenario?
That's a wish list thing. You know, we've got some internal information that we can use to build it out. But if there was a vendor out there, to my knowledge, there's not. But if there was a vendor out there that would offer that could, you know, compile the data on a large scale. Again, my hunch, my working theory is that someone who's more stable and or homeowner probably has a higher propensity to pick up the phone or pay a bill. Now, you got to follow the data. So if that's not what the data yields, then, you know, you chase it wherever it goes. But that's my own inclination.
One thing I also was wondering about, and I don't know if this is something that any of your vendors provide, but how about the other collections that are on their credit report, like looking at their paid credit collections, like how long it took them to pay their other collection agency debts compared to, like, you know, maybe what the sweet spot is for your response rate? Because that was one thing that I was noticing. We implemented IVR in our office, I don't know, 5-6 months ago. And it was kind of interesting to me to watch, like, when that notice went out with the IVR information and when the consumer actually took the time to pay the account. And it was such a varied amount. In my mind, I get a bill, you know, I look for, you know, maybe the payday, next payday, and then I'm paying it based on that next payday. So it was kind of interesting to me that the consumers that we're dealing with are actually kind of different. They vary their payment process, and then also what kind of accounts were being paid on our IVR system compared to people calling in and making that same payment.
Kelly, this is Nick. So to talk about that a little bit, so each of the bureaus, so Experian, Equifax, and TU, they offer specific sets of products that would get you the data that you're looking for. Whether you know it's consumer has a mortgage, consumer has paid collection accounts, paid a collection account within the last 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. So most of those credit bureaus will be able to provide you back some of that specific but kind of high level overview of the consumer's credit report and allow you to then implement that data into your system, implement that into your scoring. So you can definitely do that. I'm sure there's other companies now that buy the credit bureau data that can also provide that, but the bureaus would be one, any of the bureaus that are out there could get you what you're looking for. And they're fairly, I think the last time, you know, we priced them around, I mean, anywhere from 20 to 30 cents and can bring you back maybe 30 different attributes out of the 300 to 400 that they have. And a lot of them will allow you to go in and pick which attributes you want to get back. So they'll give you the list of the 300 to 400 attributes, and then you'll take maybe 10% of those that you'll want to bring back into your system. And then you can kind of manipulate that how you want. But I think to Mike's point, if you have a consumer that has a mortgage, then the data is probably going to tell you that those accounts liquidate out higher than a consumer that is a renter. If it's not the case, then you don't go with it. But you know, things like that, a consumer that has paid an account in collections within the last 6 months is more likely to pay than a consumer that has not paid a collection account but has it on their report for the last 2 years. So you can manipulate the data how you see fit once you get that in your hands.
So I think that goes to the point of like just kind of being stagnant and like utilizing the scoring that is integrated with my collection software and it's working. So don't break what's not broken kind of thing, or not fix what's not broken. So that's one of those things I guess I'll need to go back to. The other question I had was, I know a lot of agencies have stopped reporting to all three bureaus due to eOSCar and all the battles that we deal with compliance on a credit reporting standpoint. How do you evaluate the three bureaus together and which one has the strongest data that you're looking for?
Well, I don't want to, piss off any of the bureaus that are on there, so maybe we can talk offline. But I think that, they used to kind of report regionally, and now they're all, most of them get all the same data, but there are some nuances to the different bureaus that I've personally come across over the last couple of decades. And I think that, as you go through the process, you just kind of see that, look at what others are doing, best practices. But I would definitely be more than happy to talk to you about that offline.
Okay. And then do you just do I'm not speaking of any of them specifically, but do you just compare apples to apples? Like you get samples of all from all three bureaus and their free tests or what have you, and see what works best for your industry or your accounts or your area?
Yeah, that's certainly a way to do it. I think that in addition to that, what I was mentioning before is really looking at those credit attributes. And like you said, so as an example, if we're looking at paid, let's say collection accounts, right? So you can even look at, give me when you get it into your system, you could say, let me build a file of all of the consumers that have no accounts in collections on their credit report. Now, granted, it's in collections because you have it, you may or may not report, but you can segregate out those instead of isolating out, and maybe you just do a VOAPS voicemail drop on accounts that have five or more collection accounts, right? You don't want to spend a bunch of resources on it, but you can do, you can look at it from that perspective. So they definitely, you know, will provide that type of data.
Perfect. Thank you.
So there's a, you know, most people have a credit score, most people have credit histories, but there's a significant, not significant, but there's a decent, you know, portion of the population that do not have either a big credit history or any credit history at all. And I'm just curious how you incorporate those, you know, that type of situation where there isn't a big credit history into your model when you're scoring an account. And you know, I'm not sure if that's something that is taken into consideration or not, but I wanted to ask just to sort of see if that's something that you guys think about. Nick, why don't you take that one first, if you don't mind?
Sure. So I think that in regards to that specifically, you definitely, the way that we approach it, that I've approached it, is a lack of credit history would be right up there with somebody that right below, maybe somebody that has a good or very well credit history. So you know, the fact that they have limited to no credit history, I would not recommend or look at that as a deterrent to not focus in or maybe put a little bit more emphasis on that, because if they truly understand the credit bureau and the reporting process, then if they have little credit history and you have a negative thing that's going to go onto their credit, that's going to be very impactful for them. So there is a more of a desire, if they're informed and educated about it, to take care of that and resolve it rather than allow that to be what defines their credit report.
Well, and I would say, and I also wonder if, without being a credit expert, that consumer that doesn't have a lot of credit history, if you reach out to them in a different format, maybe like referring them to information about credit reports, like annualcreditreport.com or some other resource. I know the Federal Trade Commission has a ton of information on their website about credit reports and how they work. So kind of maybe referring those consumers to an education opportunity to and be more helpful to that consumer, so they would see the impact of this collection on negatively impacting their credit that they haven't even really had a chance to build up, especially for our younger generation consumers.
Is that something you do, Kelly?
It's right, not like, something I do. Like I said, I've got this long list of great things that I would like to implement. And I've always kind of had the idea. Our company came from an Equifax affiliate. So my background when I originally started was maintaining credit reports and dealing with direct consumer disputes, and kind of learned through my years of experience that there's a real lack of education to consumers and misinformation out there on how credit reports actually work. And so that had been our philosophy for a long time of really like educating consumers. And as more and more consumers' attorneys started baiting collection agencies and suing them for kind of misleading information on credit reports, we've backed up a little bit on, you know, our collector's basic term is we're not credit experts. We're not exactly sure how this will affect your score. But I kind of feel like I need to find a middle zone. I need to find a place where our collectors are free to give some education or refer consumers in the right direction, because those consumers that we help, I find that they're more likely to pay when a new account comes in. We've created an environment where our office is well known in our community, and so those people know that we're here to help them. And have for, you know, the many years we've been in business. And so trying to continue that reputation, I think, is really important for me and my office.
Go ahead, Mike. I cut you off before, sir.
No, you're good. So what I was going to add is, if you have an internal model, you will have a score. You know, think about the criterion that we mentioned earlier. You're going to have a prior payment, yes or no, and you can weight that. You're going to know if you've had a contact with them. You're going to know what your class of business and payment, recovery rate, balance, and age are. You're going to have a score. Now, if you use an external model exclusively and you pay for it, you may or you may not have scores. You know, we get about 85% back with scores. But I think what Nick mentioned is interesting, because I've got a note to myself right here that, you know, you got to look at the stats. how well are you performing on accounts without scores? And what we see is on that 15% of accounts, give or take, we perform just as well as if they were high scoring. And that's exactly what you heard Nick say. But we follow the data, and that's what the data is telling us. So really, in effect, we're not getting a score, we're not having to pay for it, but it's telling us everything we need to know.
You talked about data, you talked about statistics, so that leads me to ask this question, and I'll ask you first, Mike. How do you determine the ROI, the return on investment, on whether something, a new piece of data, be it internal or external, is worth it? Is it straight up, you know, how much more money did we collect using it, or are there other factors that you'll look at?
So the stat geek in me says you need to control for all outside factors and confounds, right? The reality is you can't control for, changes in the economy. You can look at internal changes, your company and your clients. You can look at collector tenure. You know, you can look at factors that also affect ROI. And control for them in a statistical model, it's not always easy, but inevitably you're going to need to start with a baseline, and you're going to need to try to control for as many factors as you possibly can, and then you're going to have to see how well it performs and what does the investment look like. And like Nick was talking earlier about triggers, right? Triggers make a lot of sense. There's a lot of good information. Some of them cost a fortune. Some of them are relatively cheap. You have to really look at what you're getting, and you got to keep going back to the data and seeing what it tells you. Because you might be able to collect from everyone that you know, not everyone, but might be able to collect from a lot of people if you know exactly where they work, what their credit score is, and if you want to spend a lot of time and energy getting them on the phone. But how much did you have to spend for the score and the triggers and getting a collector to maybe manually dial that thing repeatedly and send out letters? And maybe the score is terrific and you spend a bundle of money and it's a $50 account with a 30% commission. You know, it just doesn't make sense a lot of times. So you got to be able to draw the line. And I think that's what it comes down to is, are you scoring everything? Even $15, $20 accounts? I don't know. You got to draw the line somewhere. Right? Are you triggering everything, or do you have balance cutoffs? And you should start with a baseline, not only as far as scoring and what the costs are, but a baseline with how much are you spending on work efforts, right? So do you know how much it costs you to have a collector have a conversation with a consumer? You definitely know how much it costs to send a letter, right? Are you taking into other considerations like mail returns and managing those and disputes and validation requests? You know, so really asking the right questions is what it comes down to as far as return on investment.
What I also think that to Mike's point is that the effectiveness of your staff, I think that that's one thing that this data doesn't really tell you. And I find that sometimes I'll think that something's not performing very well, and then I realize that I really put this dead in front of a batch of new hires, and I put it, you know, on a more senior staff desk, and I get better results. And so that was one of the things that we keep looking at, is trying to make sure that our staff isn't affecting the results that we think we're seeing on the floor. And that's something that, you know, one of the battles that we've dealt with periodically.
Excellent. What about you, Nick? Is it something you're looking, you know, when you're trying to figure out what the ROI is it, you know, is it just the collection rate? Are there too many variables? You know, how do you approach that?
So I don't think that there's any real singular variable that you would look at. I think understanding the premise that as we continue to move forward, and as we look back at the history over the last year, 3, 5, 7 years, one thing that we can pretty much attest to is that our overall contact rates, the right party contacts that we have based on how many call attempts we're putting out for consumers, continues to decline year over year. So whether that be, you know, from when caller ID was first established to you know, sending accounts right to voicemails to different time of days. Year over year, we see less of a drop now than we have. But as we continue to move forward, consumers are going to want to communicate the way of their preferred channel. So we're probably going to see a less and less contact rate as we go by, because people are going to want to be contacted by text messaging, by emails, different things like that. And so with that being said, I think what's important to look at, and you can definitely look at it from a contactability score, but you can also look at it from the recovery model, is did the segmentation, the accounts that we're calling, did it provide for a right party contact? So did the effort, the money that we put forth, did it allow us to get that consumer on the phone and speak to them? So did it create an opportunity? And from that point to go back to what Kelly was referencing, it really comes back to the employee development, the training, the collectors, the skill set. It at that point, up to them to utilize what they've learned to start closing these accounts. So did those collectors convert those right party contacts to payments? So for me personally, it's really about looking at, are we creating enough opportunities for our collectors to capitalize on in order to generate the revenue and the returns that we need to?
There was one question that I wanted to ask you, each of you, and I'm going to reframe it slightly. The original question was, why has the industry and collection agencies been reluctant to embrace incorporating alternative data or different types of data into their collection models? And I'd like to reframe it. And, you know, it seems to me the conversation that one of the themes of the conversation we've had today is sort of almost like an art versus science. Or to put it another way, it's sort of almost like a money ball type situation where there's this old group of people or this, you know, established group of people who look at certain statistics, but there's a new, you know, these new agencies or these new thinkers that are coming in and applying new types of data, new methods into determining whether something's collectible or not. So I'm curious, you know, do you see that sort of battle between art and science, or is it is the industry moving more towards being so data focused, which I think is not necessarily a bad thing. It's a good thing, I think, but moving more towards being so data focused that's really what's going to determine how effective a collection agency is. And Mike, I'll let you take a first crack at that one.
I like the Moneyball analogy, but the Moneyball analogy, they were the team with the fewest dollars to spend. And I think it might be a little, it might be something of a contrast. So, you know, you have an industry that's full of small shops, right? We just went through an acquisition. We acquired a smaller agency and they aren't scoring anything. You know, it's a lot of what you said about, you know, old hat, old philosophy. But I think you have small shops that might have tight budgets, or they think they have tight budgets. And I think it's a lot like dollars spent on marketing, right? What comes first? The investment, using my air quotes, the cost, or the resources, the return, you know, what comes first, the expense or the return. So, you know, a lot of agencies, you talk to will say they can't afford it. And what I would say to that is you can't afford not to. So it really is, I think it comes down to size and scope, and I think it comes down to philosophy. You know, you do need to be aware of a lot of gimmicks out there. You know, anybody guaranteeing a contact or guaranteeing 30% increase in results run far and fast. But there's a lot of credible vendors out there too, you know, so rely on people in your benchmarking groups, rely on people like this webinar. You know, hit up people offline and then ask them, you know, have you been to the big three and had them all do a champion challenge score, and who came out the best? And I'll tell you, if you ask me off this conversation, but rely on your peers. Because they're going to have the best resources. They've already spent the money and made the mistakes. So those are the people that, that you can rely on when it comes to who you should go with, because I do think it's a mistake not to get some type of score and not to get started in the, what we see as the way forward.
So maybe Mike and Nick, you can comment on this. So like in my mind, you could start really small. Like you don't have to like all of those, I don't know, eight things you listed in the beginning, Mike, that you're doing. I mean, that would be like somebody that's been doing this for a while. So if I was an agency that didn't do any type of scoring, where do we start? I mean, is it credit based first, or do you look internally first from a perspective of not any additional investment other than time?
So how strong is your staff? Do you have internal IT department that can put together some coefficients and, you know, some standard deviation models? If you don't have the internal resources, I would say it's definitely worth looking outside first. If you've got your own internal IT and someone who knows their way around statistics models, then you can start building that internally. But I think the cost is low enough to find an outside vendor to get started, regardless. And then if you want to build your own internal models, which we recommend, it's just going to be a matter of the resources to pull that off.
And then are you or Nick using any speech analytics data? So looking at your call recordings and seeing, you know, I don't know how successful you are with your right party contacts. What's making the consumer pay you? What's making them hang up the phone on your collectors? Are you guys doing anything like that?
So Kelly, just to finish up that first point regarding where to start, just my recommendation on there would be, you know, to first start with the contactability aspect, right? Which of your accounts have the most likelihood of being contacted? And then if you want to advance that further, then you start looking at credit worthiness. Because if you do it the flip side to that, and you look for credit worthiness before you look at contactability, it's like the cart pulling the horse. You don't put yourself in the best position to win. So if you know that you have a segment of accounts that you're most likely going to contact, and then you break that down by which ones of those that you're going to contact are credit worthy, you'll find that you'll get the biggest bang for your buck rather than taking your inventory and saying that X amount are credit worthy and then applying the contactability aspect to it. At that point, you may have eliminated a ton of accounts that, yes, they're credit worthy, but you're just never going to talk to them. You're not going to get in contact with them, or you have a low probability of getting in contact. And then
I would agree with that as well, Nick, just to kind of throw that out there.
Cool. And then as far as speech analytics, I think that, you know, yes, we incorporate some of that, but I think that that is really getting advanced from what we've talked about to start pulling in on top of it, adding in that speech analytic data. I think your perspective that you had earlier about trying to understand consumer habits or what they're doing, why they're doing it, I think that's really critical and important and can be kind of found in that speech analytics. But it's definitely something that you can look at trends and apply those, especially to the employees. But I would say that that's probably a little bit more further advanced from the discussion that we're having on how you would incorporate that and bring in that data to be relevant.
Thank you, guys.
Excellent. We've only got a few minutes left, and there are a few questions here in the queue that I'd like to get to. If you wanted to ask a question, now's probably your last chance to type it into your Zoom webinar control panel and get it in, and we'll try to get to it. Let's see if we can get to these. And the first question, how does the scoring model account for people that might have a low credit score but may have Medicaid to pay on a medical debt? Does anyone want to try and take that one?
This is Nick. I think that, you know, there's a couple things to point out on that quickly. You know, one, with the scoring models, and they've been doing this for 10, 15 years now, they have models where you recovery scores that include medical debt and recovery scores that exclude medical debt. So depending upon what you want to do or what you want to receive back, you can actually work accounts because medical debt is such a, you know, so prominent with a lot of Americans, and especially the leading cause of collection accounts on the bureau. You have to figure out the feast or famine that you want on that. So you know, if they have Medicaid to pay on a medical debt. I don't know if you can get as technical to find that out, but you know, you also have to apply some of the new credit reporting rules that, you know, if an account is paid in full, then they take it off within 4 months. So there's a lot of variables if you're including discussing medical debt.
And one thing, just on a side note, is we were finding that our clients were having trouble identifying the Medicaid in our area, you know, Medi-Cal or Medicare. They were having trouble finding them, and it was because the data that they were getting back, especially like on our ambulance rides, was misinformation. So like misspelling on names, wrong socials, wrong date of births. So what we did is help our client clean up their data. And they were able to find that data, find the people that had Medi-Cal or Medicare a little bit easier. And so that's kind of how we handled that internally for our clients.
Excellent. Another question. Have you run any analysis on previous bankruptcy filings? For example, a customer filed within the last, you know, 3 years compared to more than 3 years ago, or multiple filings within the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years?
Best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. No, you know, the cause of a lot of bankruptcies is medical issues. You know, so what we see is one bankruptcy at some point in the distant past. Those consumers are behaving currently like anyone else, as if they had not filed. Someone who's filed in the near past, or someone who has multiple filings, does not perform well on either of the models that we use. And what I mean by not perform well is they don't pay at the high frequency rates, and they have low scores.
Okay. Can you go into more what data points go into a contactability score?
Yeah, so a lot of that is dependent upon the provider that you're getting it from. So, I mean, there's multiple people that can provide stuff like that, whether it's from Neustar to Locate Smarter or companies like that. But when you're looking at, you know, the data points, so they're looking at normally a handful of different factors, but most notably, they're trying to determine if the phone number is registered to the consumer of record, and if that is registered to the address that you provide. And so it's looking at a lot of match logic. It'll also look at, you know, if the phone number is not registered to the consumer of record, is that phone number registered to the same address that the consumer lives at? Is that phone number not registered to any of the known addresses of the consumer? And also what these vendors are able to do now, very interesting, is they can also look at inactive phone numbers. So they can say, if you provide them this phone number, they can look at it and tell that this phone has not been used in the last 6 months or greater. So that's going to come back with a very low score, because nobody, you know, it may go to that consumer or have some relevance to them, but they're not using it. They're not picking it up. So there's some issue with that line. So there's a handful of different factors that go into the various contactability scores.
All right, one last question I think we have time for. How are you producing your internal score? Does your collection software generate it for you, or are you using a program like Microsoft Excel or Access?
We're using SQL Server is what we're using.
Yeah, we leverage
not
it through
the
our collection.
Cocktail napkin.
Yeah, we leverage it through the collection system and I'll, you know, help kind of integrate that into different fields, and then ultimately, you know, put together through different queries what we're looking for.
So, well, I think we've gotten through most of the questions, and we're just about at an hour. So what I'd like to do is give each of the panelists a chance to make some parting comments before we hang up with everybody. You know, thoughts, ideas, anything that you want, any sort of takeaways. And Kelly, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Mike. So I just appreciate Mike and Nick sharing so much. I think I have more notes than I started with here. So I think that the takeaway that I took is I've got some room for improvement. And I also think that looking at the consumer as a customer, I think really is going to be the key to the change in our industry. And you know, my goal as you know, somebody in the industry is really changing the perception of collection agencies. And I think that that's done through the way that we communicate with consumers. And so for me, I think utilizing some of these goals that I got, or the tools that I have, I think that it will give us an opportunity to kind of gear some of our communications to the people that we're talking to, and hopefully then result in more money for us and our clients. So thank you.
Sounds great. Nick, your turn.
So I think just in conclusion, there's not a one-size-fits-all model when it comes to incorporating data or alternative data into that into the collection process. So, you know, keeping that in mind, that, you know, at the end of the day, the objective is to get the consumer on the phone and to get the bill paid. So, you know, when you do that, I think it's important that, you know, that moves forward and in the right direction, and then you work backwards from there. So once you're able to get that going and understand that, and then how you get to that point using the data is something that, you know, is always going to be important.
Excellent. Thanks. And Mike?
Collections is art and science, right? But not to put too fine of a point on it. I see, like a lot of other industries before us, you see it trending towards science. I think statistics is very important. You don't have to be an expert to get started. I think the important part is getting started. So whatever's holding you back, you know, taking that leap of faith is a very important first step. And what I will add too is, you know, while we're on the subject, score your clients. You know, you know how well you're doing for them. You know which clients you're spending more work efforts on and you're spending more high cost efforts on. And the important thing is asking the right questions, which we mentioned earlier. So are you making money on them? Are you losing money on your clients? We hope that the latter is not true, but do you know the answer to that? Because if you don't, then you need to model those up as well.
An excellent tip for the end of the webinar. Thank you. Before I let everybody go, I want to thank Nick, Kelly, and Mike for their insights and their time today. You know, I don't delude myself. Nobody, you know, signs up for these to hear my voice. So I definitely, this webinar would not have been possible without their participation. I also want to thank MicroBuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. Go to microbuilt.com, microbuilt.com to learn more about the company, or call 800-884-4747 for more information. Thank you to all of you who registered, who participated, who asked questions. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for more news and more webinars in the very near future. A recording of this event will be posted up on the site in the next day or two. And I hope everybody enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks.